Welcome, and thank you for listening to Grace Heritage Church Audio, Building a Household of Faith on a Foundation of Grace. Visit us online at graceheritage.org. Please stay tuned after the message for more information.
Good morning. We just finished up our Bible study time that we've put, I don't remember, 4 or 5 weeks into thinking about a Christian view of technology. Lots of good stuff taken away from there, but we wrapped that up last week. And we're kind of in a transition time. Pastor Paul has intentions of beginning a Bible study on suffering and a Christian view of suffering in a couple weeks. But next week, Pastor Tom Hicks is coming over to preach for us, and the Bible study time we'll be using it as reflection on his sermon. And this week and the week after that, I'm getting to repeat two Bible studies that I got to do a little over a year ago, on the first one being on how to have good conversations, the craft of conversation, and the next one on how not to evangelize. So if you were here for this last year, you don't have to stay. You may go ahead and go. That's, of course, a joke. It's a joke because I've been conversing with you for this past year and you still need this. Kidding. All right. No, these are good reminders. So that, like, there's a question, set of questions in here, and I'm probably going to read most of them to get your juices flowing. But like this list of questions, I go back to almost every month. When I know, okay, we're going to have a bunch of people over, we're going to some place where there's a lot of people going to be there, especially if I know I don't know them, and I'll be introducing myself over and over and over again, international dinner, something like that, I will, before I go that afternoon, I'll open up the page and I'll read back through these questions and try to remember some good things to get conversation going. Okay, so it's not, hopefully it won't be a waste of time to go back through and think about the good information here. Okay? So let me pray for us and we will get started. Father in heaven, we want to be better humans. We want to be better image bearers, people whom interact with other humans well. There are so many good things that grow out of a good conversation. So we pray that there will be just little bits that we can all take away from this next 45 minutes that will make us better at fellowshipping and making disciples, evangelizing, being hospitable to people, encouraging others. So we ask that you would work that out by the power of your Holy Spirit and in the name of Jesus. Amen. Why are we talking about conversations? Just listed most of them in the prayer I just gave, because they are integral to what it is to be a human being. There's so many things about being a human that we all need to be taking part in, and they manifest themselves differently, right? To take part in the dominion mandate, this is a good thing. Every human will do that, but that will manifest itself differently for each of us. Some of us are big into gardening or woodwork. Some of us, you know, got the short end of the stick, and we like electricity and stuff like that, okay? All right, but as far as being a relational being, which is so integral to being an image bearer of God, there aren't a whole lot of ways for that to work itself out, right? You relate to other human beings, and there aren't a whole lot of ways for that to work itself out. We do stuff together, but, I mean, just imagine having a relationship with another human and you did not talk to them. It does not make any sense at all. We communicate. We converse. That is integral to being a human being. We have to do it. And Christians should be the best at everything, including conversing. You may be familiar with like the psychological distinctions. Every human's either an introvert or an extrovert, right? And that classically is understood as where, in your relationship with other people, where are you most energized? Or you can say it the other way, what's hardest for you? Right? Classically, an extrovert is refreshed and energized from being around other people. An introvert is refreshed and energized from being alone. And if you put that on a scale of 1 to 10, and said, 1 is being a total introvert, 10 is being a total extrovert, and you were asked, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10, If you said either 1 or 10, then you don't understand yourself very well. You don't know yourself real well. Okay? We are made for solitude, and we are made for relationships. And, of course, there is a spectrum, rightly so. Okay? But most of us are going to be 4 to 6s. There can be some 3s and 7s out there as well, I'm sure. But the idea is, you say you're an introvert, maybe you are. I would consider myself an introvert on the scale, but you'll die. Right? The idea of a hermit is just absurd to the Christian worldview. God can sustain that. Ultimately, you find that relationship in Him, but He made us. It's so interesting, right? The summaries of the commandments all through the Scriptures that you start with all these laws. There's tons of them. And then Moses summarized, and then summarized, and David summarized. And you can find these summaries. And then when Jesus is asked, what are the commandments? What's the greatest commandment? He still can't just summarize it with one. He still gives two. Love the Lord your God and your neighbor as yourself. I think that's amazing that He cannot even put it down to one. We must, God made us to love, relate to other humans. And that's so integral to, like we said, evangelism, fellowship with one another. Those are probably the two that are most in my mind as we go through this. Of course, this one is the springboard for 2 weeks from now on teaching on evangelism. But probably just as much as evangelism is in my mind, I have fellowship in mind. Life-producing conversations. Socializing is great, but I'm distinguishing it from that. Fellowship, things that move us along in our faith with the Lord. Okay, so if you want to be able to do those things, then you must converse with people. And I have two kind of big principles for how to have a good conversation. The second one has, I cheat. I have lots of sub-points in there. But if you think about these two things, I think it will help you in improving the conversations you have with people. The first one is we need to learn to ask real, open-ended, timeless questions. All right, I put good questions. We need to learn to ask good questions, but that's vague. We need to ask real questions that are open-ended and timeless. Okay? We get major insight from Jesus on this. Jesus is the master question asker. The Gospel of John records Him asking at least 23 questions, depending how you slice and dice it. Okay, but full of them. Here are some examples of questions asked by Jesus. These aren't all just in the Gospel of John. What are you seeking? What does this have to do with me? Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? Do you take offense at this? Do you want to go away as well? Why do you not understand what I say? Do you understand what I have done to you? Will you lay down your life for me? How can you say, show us the Father? Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me? Why do you ask me? Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? Why do you call me good? Who do you say that I am? What do you want me to do for you? Do you have any fish? Do you love me more than these? If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Just a sampling. Huge spectrum of different types of questions with different purposes. Jesus asked questions to uncover and show people their own assumptions and allegiances. He asked questions to get people to admit their known assumptions and allegiances. He asked questions rhetorically to make various points. And probably most relevantly for us, he asked questions to initiate and to direct conversations and where they go. Okay, and we find examples for all those. Now, I said we need to ask real questions. What do I mean by that? Questions that aren't poorly masked as statements. Right? We do that a lot where I just want to say, hey, did you know that such and such? And I'm really just wanting to make a point. This is more common for me. Man, when you're a bad converser, it's easy to come up with good teaching on it. I've realized I will, unconsciously most of the time, but I'll ask a question to you about something I want to talk about, and then it ends up just being a springboard for me getting to share a lot of stuff. I think that happened yesterday with Jack. I asked him a question, I wanted to talk about something, and then I ended up just kind of talking, you know, open mic night. And so we don't need to be doing that. Don't ask a question just because you want to lead into a conversation where you can talk a lot about something, like me. So real questions, that's probably the easiest one. Open-ended questions, right? Usually, if you ask a yes or no question, do you, okay? Something like that, or does it? Then that doesn't go very far. They say yes, boom, conversation. Is that another standstill? All right, so we want to ask open-ended questions that begin with the interrogatives, right? Who, what, where, when, why. These help move questions along. That obviously, yes or no questions set up good questions. You know, did you see the game this past week? Oh, yes. Okay, well then, what do you think about blank? Okay. And then, most importantly here, as far as what kind of questions are good questions, timeless questions. And again, Mr. Sanders said this to me well over a year ago. He said, ask yourself, how significant would this conversation be, or this question even be, a year ago, or a year from now? Right? Is it a conversation, or a question to initiate a conversation, that has that kind of timeless importance? Okay, it's not to say if you can't answer, if your answer to that question is, well, actually, this wouldn't be make much sense a year ago, right? The event just happened. Auburn just played that game. That doesn't mean you don't have that conversation. We're just trying to give you a spectrum of, you know, the best types of conversations. They're ones that are timeless. Current event questions often have any significant impact on our lives. They're not well suited for deep friendships. We have them. They're good. Okay, but I can just as easily have a conversation about the football game with my wife, someone who I'm closest to, as with the person I just met. Okay, and that's a telling that, okay, that conversation is not necessarily going to move us along in our faith. Let's see. There's a lot more on this. So questions then that are timeless are ones about things, about life, about them, about plans and people's opinions. So you ask people, and think of the college student classic questions, right? What's your name? What are you majoring in? Where are you from? Boom, 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 boom. Very similar. You take out what's your majoring in for graduates, and it's what do you do, right? What's your job? Occupation. Okay. Well, those are great questions. As long as you follow them up with, why did you choose to major in that? Any guesses on like what it is about your background that made you want to do that? What do you hope to do with that when you're done? Where did that come from, right? At questions about that, where are you from? So, tell me about your family. What family member are you closest to? Or who do you think you're most like? What do you like most about your town? What do you like least about that town? I mean, so they're just questions that after you get the fact, right, they're from Birmingham, and then you ask opinion. Do you like Birmingham? And what do you or don't you? Why? So things that those help just moving a little bit deeper. Don't just ask for facts. Ask for opinions about their facts. So here's a couple examples here. If there's anything... We ask people, how have you been, right? Or what did you do this weekend? Okay. Move it deeper. You say, well, if you could use your weekend differently, what would you do? Right? You feel like you, and basically it's a way of asking, did you use your time well? What do you think is important? Are you really satisfied that you watched 3 movies, you know, this past weekend? Okay. And on occasion, you know, maybe that's exactly the answer. Okay. If there was anything about this past year, week, semester that you could change, what would it be? What do you think are the biggest contributions to why you are where you are right now? There's a million ways to reword that one to make it not sound so, right, weird. Right? Why? So what got you to Auburn? Okay. Those kinds of things. Not just, so you're at Auburn. Now, even better here, moving on. Questions about worldview. use current events as springboards for timeless questions. So this is very similar to asking their opinions, but what's their interpretation of the facts? Now, I've got an example here. I used this last time. Like, when you're talking about football, I've asked before, going, man, is there anything else that, you know, makes you excited as Auburn football does? You know, it's just trying to jump away and see. You may land on somewhere just as, I don't use shallow in a negative way. You may not get any deeper. Ice cream now, you're talking about. Okay? But it gives it a chance. You know, what if they throw out something helping people, right? Making significant impacts on, you know, my community. You know, think of current, you don't want to get too dogmatic here because current events often can be really significant, right? Anyone who has a knowledge of history, you know, knows how World War I started and all the stuff going on in Ukraine, you go, huh, you know, wow, this could be something important to talk about. You don't know until a year or five from now on whether or not it's important to be talking about. If this just fizzles out to be another, you know, political game, well then, yeah, maybe it turns out to be not a timeless conversation. But you don't always know that ahead of time. But you can ask questions in the moment about that help it ensure it will be. You know, what is it about people, no matter where they're from, what their philosophies are, that makes us willing to fight other people, literally fight, kill other people about money and power, natural resources? All right? Middle Easterners are doing it, the extremists, obviously, and all sorts of different types. I mean, if you know anything about I have friends here who are big supporters of the Taliban. I think Hezbollah, they have insulting names for them. And to us, often we're going, oh, wow, they're just all in the same pool to us. So you have questions to ask. Why is that? And why is it they're fighting, and then these people who have no, at least seemingly, religious convictions whatsoever, willing to come in and risk war to have a little piece of land on a sea that's not connected to any major body of water, you know? I mean, so there are just questions to move deeper. What is it about humans that makes it, no matter what our culture, no matter what our background, we do that? And maybe you can move conversations deeper. All sorts of political conversations can relate to this. What are rights? Oh, my goodness. That's just thrown around like crazy. What is a right? Where do they come from? If they exist, how would we know what one is? Right, so you can move a conversation about some political debate to something much deeper. Movies, friends. The key to being a good conversationalist, particularly in using these good worldviews, these worldview type questions, is just being awake yourself. Okay? Does anyone else watch? All right, raise your hand if you saw Batman Begins. All right, one of the new Batman movies. I mean, it should scream in the face. Oh, wow, like, Batman just saved the day by taking on the guilt and moral culpability from someone else onto himself. Wow, where does that come from? Why do I like that as being heroic? Okay, or the opposite. Often it's the most, you know, we're not, let's see, what movie we see recently? That Tom Cruise movie, where he wears the dumb space outfit. That's probably a lot of them. Oblivion. Who saw Oblivion recently, right? That one's pretty in your face. What humans are material, physical beings. Everything about you can be summarized by my touchable stuff. Right? That's one of the big themes that movie's waving. Yeah, it's got an entertaining story, supposedly, but it's got a point. The soul is large. If we can speak about the soul, it's not an immaterial anything. Okay, Avatar. We all saw Avatar. Completely blind to it is promoting a Spinoza-like worship of naturalism, not nature. Right? Remember all those lines? Oh, no, no, no. This is different. We should not. These natives, they're not dumb. You can measure it. It's really real. We can do tests on it. That is absolutely intentional. From those, I don't know, those directors, screenwriters, pushing a worldview forward. And if you're just awake and watching these movies, it one, it enhances them. Okay, most movies that do well, the people are that smart. It is not an accident most of the time. And it makes it, it just works with the storyline, right? Avatar is entertaining, even if you're not aware of that, but it's more so. You see the worldview that they're trying to push, the questions they're trying to ask, and the answers that they're often giving to them. What's up? Come on. The point there is, it's just in conversations about Avatar, you can ask specifically questions of going, did you catch that they were going for that? Did you? You may not get the Spinoza reference, right? But so making nature, so you can just get that. What we can know and what's real is what we can touch, taste, see, and smell. That's what it's saying. Do you think that's true? On what, you know, why do you think that's true? Do you agree with the writers of Avatar? Right? I mean, it's just an example of, I probably brought it up because almost probably 100% of people have seen it if you've watched movies. And, you know, we miss it. We're not awake to these things that are coming in at us all the time. They're great things to use, and they're great things to critique, both and. I love Inception, right? How do you know, right? That's what the wife asks. Just stay here. If you're not sure, it doesn't matter that it's a dream, right? I'm here. I just know. I just can look at you, and you're not her, right? That's more or less what he says. How do you know Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God? You've never seen him before. No one can make this guy up. I just look at him in this book, and he screams at me as, yes, he is real. He is God. I must obey him. He is Lord. And this movie paints a picture there for me to point at. Did you notice how he knew? That movie kind of tries to play the game of you don't really know, but it's not. It's really not. It's giving you an answer. You can know. Anyways, that probably doesn't make much sense if you didn't see Inception and you don't think that way. Yes? That's good. Yeah, what, in the same way that, all right, so I thought about this. I thought, we're going to get stuck out here, and I need to do just a Bible study on the theology of art and beauty. Like, it communicates. Good art, it's almost a definition. It's like it's a form of communication. Okay? And so we as Christians should appreciate the things that other image bearers are doing and be aware, be awake that it's speaking. If it's good art, there's lots of bad art out there. It's not. There are movies made literally with nothing in mind other than make money. But that's rarely the case. Rarely you don't hear those. Or they're only out for a summer and no one buys the DVD. Right? They are communicating. That's why Matrix was so popular. Y'all help me out. I mean, there's so many movies that they, yes, it's a great story, and it's a message as well. Have you heard of this guy, Jesus? Like, and why there's this, why not just start in heaven? Why not just start at the end state? Or why not at least begin with just cross? All right, we fell, sin, Jesus, Genesis chapter 4. Right? But there's something about the story that communicates in a way that you can't just say it. And arts and movies are for that. And if you're anti-movie, you ought not be. Movies can do something in a way books never can, will ever be able to do. And vice versa. Books can do things that movies will never be able to do. And every other form of art is like that way. So awake to what a movie is, and knowing that if it's a good movie, it's got a message, or multiple messages, or at least asking questions. They don't always try to answer them. It's asking some question. Right? What's most important in the world? Why do we exist? Those kinds of things. So those are just, this is probably the area that may be the most difficult to get good at, but it by far has the most potential in taking conversations with people at the realm that they are comfortable with and moving them deeper, okay? Helping them wake up as well, because they're vegetables just like we are watching in front of them.
Because your worldview is not only how you look at it, but it's what you say truth is. Mm-hmm. So their worldviews, they're saying this is true. Mm-hmm. It's implying that everything that's counter to that is not true. Mm-hmm. And there is also a worldview where they're saying this is the way we answer the questions, to the big life questions. Mm-hmm. We answer it that this is where we came from and why we're here and where we're going and all that. There's a worldview in every movie and book and whatever. And trying to discern that, kind of way what I think of, Brandon said, be awake, is where are these people coming from? Mm-hmm. Because we need to be critical thinkers, because we're not always very good at that.
Mm-hmm. Great opportunity for training your kids as well. There's a movement, probably y'all's generation of parenting, that we think we took a psychological view of the world and thinking, well, we're nothing but a result of our inputs. We become whatever the inputs were. So control the inputs, right? Homeschool, don't let them watch those movies, right? Don't, if they don't know what Harry Potter is, that's a good like thing. And like that's an awful, I mean, there's certainly some of that, but more importantly is, no, we're training them to interact with the inputs. We're a result of an interaction with their inputs. And when you watch movies with your kids, helping them to see, did you notice that? What about that was correct, and what about that was a distortion? And right, pause button is a great invention, right? Okay. That's right. Gosh, we can make it all about this. You know, I was in a conversation once, and we were talking about, you know, the risk of the supernatural kind of wizardry stuff and things like Harry Potter and stuff like that. And we were talking about that, and it finally just came out right. I said, that may be a legitimate concern. I'm far more concerned about Cinderella and my daughter thinking that life would just be perfect if the right guy would come along and save me from my horror. That, our culture's acceptance of homosexuality was not a result of will and grace, right? That's too in your face. It's more subtle. It's way more subtle. Think of the number of movies where we root for things like adultery, right? Oh, her husband's so bad on her. And so thankfully this other guy, man, if only they could be together. And even if we know we shouldn't, we can feel the tug of the heart, because that's what the art does. The art is meant to do that. And we have to be discerning, awake, stuff. So, that's real popular today. Y'all hear that? The noble criminal, right? The people, they're sticking it to the man through their thievery, right? And bucking authority. All right, that's good. So we go there for a long time. And rather, so, because I think it is super important. I think it's super important. It's not just movies, of course. It's art that influences the popular culture, right? Someone famous once said, let someone else write the laws of the nation, let me write their ballads, right? That's what changes, art is what changes cultures. But those directors, they're reading the philosophers. The novelists are reading the academics, and then they're the ones who gets it to everyone else. Most of us don't read philosophical journal papers, but they do. So that's where the front line is, I think, is art, movies, stuff like that. Okay. Qualification. I'm not saying that these are the only kind of questions we're asked. We're not trying to make every conversation about our deepest, darkest secrets, but we just need to be aware. Is that the only kind of conversations we have are ones that hover at a current event level? We don't want that. All right, so some really easy questions here. Hey.
The thought just occurred to me, how do you have a conversation around things about which you feel super strongly that maybe are not
Yes.
Engage them around some of those things, and they can get kind of heated.
Mm-hmm.
How do you rescue that?
I have two or three points, I think, in the next section that I think we'll address that some. Okay. So if you're talking to another Christian, some really good kind of basic questions. Again, you got to reword them. You're trying to make a. This is a mixture of oral and written communication here. How has the Lord been at work in you recently? Right, and we're not looking for some. Ask it in such a way where you communicate. I'm not looking for a theological treatise. I'm not expecting some big spiritual answer. Just what have you, in your private worship life, your family worship life, what's something you've been thinking about a lot recently? That's all you're asking. It's good. It's a real good question. You want to take it even further? What's an aspect of your Christian life that you're most eager to see improved over the next year before you graduate this semester? Where do you feel like you're really weak and you really need to grow in the near future? Now, for anyone, questions like, if you could do any job, you could live anywhere, have any hobby, and money wasn't an issue, what would you do? It's a good question. In your view of a perfect world, everything goes absolutely perfectly. What do you want your life to look like next, maybe in 5 years, 10 years? Pick a good number. What do you think? A lot of people haven't thought that way, but they appreciate the question usually. Okay, and it really, I think, it reveals a lot about their worldview and what they think is important. What's the most recent thing you've learned about yourself? This is a good one. Normally don't want to bring this one out of nowhere. Some of those others are good at that. How does where you're at right now compare to what you think it would look like at this point, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Does that make sense? You have to find other ways to word it. And there are a lot of contexts where this is, you could ask this. Do you think someone's kind of complaining about this job situation or this family situation? 5 years ago, did you expect it to kind of look like this, or 10 years ago? And that to talk a lot about expectations and what we value, what we're hoping in. That's a big thing. Where is their hope? What are they longing for? Just everyone to be healthy, for the checkbook to be balanced, and savings kind of okay. And we can help reveal deep down things that aren't true. Long list here of other questions that I go back to a lot. And let me just blow through some. How do you occupy yourself most weeks? What's a typical week look like for you? When there's an interruption in that, what is that? What kind of hobbies do you like? What kind of vacations do you like to take? These are really casual questions. I find them just helpful to move on a little bit. What's been on your mind most recently? What are you good at? What are you worse at? If you could make one law, what would it be? If you could break one law, what would it be? What causes most of your stress? What are you scared of? What situations make you uncomfortable? Who do you respect most? If you could change anything about your life right now, what would it be? What's the most significant thing that happened in your country this past year? What's the happiest place you've ever lived? Well, you ask that lots of different ways. When was the happiest moment in your life? Stuff like that. A little more direct and deep, thinking in terms of evangelism in particular. Did you grow up in a religious home? What do you think about the church? What frustrates you most about Christians? Have you had any experience in your life to make you think that there's a God? What do you think about Jesus? If you could ask God one question, what would it be? This is Joseph Shanahan's, right? How much do you think you're worth? That's a great question. What do you think you're worth? Okay, so ask real, timeless, and open-ended questions. Now, secondly, lots of little sub-points here, but the big picture, and these points will work themselves out if you just remember this big one, which is apply the golden rule. What do you wish? I wish they'd ask me about, I really like talking about my dissertation stuff. I wish they'd ask me about it. Oh, but I should ask them about what they do, right? I know a lot about blank. I wish someone asked about, I should ask them about that thing I know that they're into. Okay. I think that they would benefit if they were into this thing that I'm into. Well, maybe I would benefit if I knew more about what they do and like and are into. And that just that big principle helps you guide a good conversation. Whatever you wish that others would do to you, do to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Conversation. So lots of little points I think work out of this principle. It's called a dialogue for a reason. Two people talking, talk with one another is what converse means. So having something to say does not equal being a good conversationalist. Very few people are naturally good at listening. Listening is work. Hearing is not the same thing as listening. Right? Trying to think about what you're going to say next is not listening. And when I'm in an evangelistic apologetic conversation, that is such a temptation. What am I going to stomp them on? No, listen to them. What do they have to say? If you struggle, if there's any pause in listening, it should be to pray or something like that. Pray for them. Pray for what they just said. Pray for what to say next. Proverbs 10:19, such an important verse for Brandon Eitzen. When words are many, transgression is not lacking. But whoever restrains his lips is prudent. Okay? Proverbs 10:19. Just think about what kind of persons attract me most. And I know everyone doesn't know him, but Caleb Petrie is one of the best people in the world I have a conversation with. He listens so well. He's so into what I'm into. Follow-up questions. Doesn't let me get away with stuff, but he speaks so little when he says it. I'm not offended. I'm like, wow, that's a really good point. Wow, I shouldn't have said it that way. He calls me out. Elizabeth Williams. Just, man, they're so good to talk to. So those of you who don't know him, you're lost. All right? Learn to care about what others care about. And so most people, right, the fact that God exists has so many applications, right? He made things. He made them good. So if humans are into it, if there's some subculture out there somewhere that's into it, unless it